we remain in content issues, so accounting content. As you know, one of the standards that we'll have to do very soon, and that was released actually yesterday, was RevRec. While mapping the taxonomy, we thought of a couple of issues that some of them are specific to RevRec, but some of them are just raised because of RevRec, but are more general than RevRec. Anyway, we thought that before we go into details of our issues, we will very quickly show you or tell you what revenue from contracts with customers is as an IFRS, because I assume that not all of you must be familiar with the newest IFRS that was published this, you know, yesterday only. If you could go two slides forward. One more. So revenue from contracts with customers is our new revenue standard. It's IFRS 15. It applies only to a subset of revenue that relates to contracts with customers. So the standard actually acknowledges that there are other types of revenue, or might be other types of revenue, such as dividends, such as non-exchange transactions. So a very important revenue for the IFRS foundation, such as contributions. And these revenues, they are still revenues, but they are not revenues from contracts with customers, as you cannot really identify a customer. Also, I wanted to spend 1 minute on the main definitions. The next slide. So what is revenue? Has been defined as an income arising in the course of entity's ordinary activities. And the EASB has also defined the contract and the customer. So the contract is an agreement between two parties, and the customer is a party that has contracted with the entity. And only those contracts that are with customers are covered by the new IFRS 15. The next slide shows you the main areas of presentation and disclosures. So that are the areas that will be in the taxonomy. So we have disclosures about contract balances, which might be assets, liabilities, and also as a subset of assets, there is a receivable, which is an unconditional asset, and also changes in those balances. There are actually no reconciliations as such, so you don't have to reconcile the beginning balance to the ending balance, but you have to show the main changes between the beginning balance and the ending balance. Also, there are disclosures about contract revenue, and that revenue should be disaggregated into various categories. There are performance obligations, so the nature of the goods, the payment terms, and the warranties, so in general the properties of your performance obligations in contracts. There are also disclosures about transaction price, so the revenue that will be recognized later on as part of the contract. And finally, there is a specific category of assets recognized from cost to obtain and fulfill fulfill contracts, and we'll have a question about that in the next slides. So after that very quick introduction, some issues that we encountered. As I said before, the IFRS 15 requires a disaggregation of revenue from contracts with customers, and it gives type of products or services as an example, but there are also other categories. There's about 8 categories given as examples. There might be obviously more. What we have done in the past in our common practice analysis, and then comes back to Richard's presentation, is we have identified a number of concepts that you can see on the next slide that relate to different types of revenue. So we have, for example, revenue from sale of gold, copper, silver, because we did the analysis of extractive activities. We have revenue from telephone services or interconnection services, because we did the analysis of telecommunication services. Soon we will have other types of revenue, such as transportation revenue, mail revenue, cargo revenue, and so on. That analysis has been performed when IFRS 15 was not there. So it was aimed at general revenue. We never went into the analysis whether those contracts are with contracts with customers, where the actual revenue comes from, how it can be classified. We just identified that companies commonly report revenue from, say, gold. Now, IFRS 15 requires the disaggregate, or requires one of the example disaggregations is the disaggregation by products and services. What we could do is we could transform all those types of revenue that we have identified into members on that axis. So have a gold member, silver member, telephone services member, and so on. Or we could acknowledge the fact that the common practice analysis was not really based on IFRS 15 common practice, and therefore just wait until the IFRS 15 actually comes into practice and repeat or reinforce or, you know, check the common practice analysis then to make sure that these are classified by entities as contracts with customers. So that's the first question. If you have any opinion, the sub question is, if we decided to go for it, what would the reference be? Should we reference those items to IFRS 15 or not, because they were not actually coming from IFRS 15? You said too much in the past, so now you're the first choice.
Plus, he's got facial expressions that tell me he's got practice.
Not really.
You know, members just seem more logical, but I'll say I don't feel strongly either way. Like, you know, there's a real logical reason why it should be this versus that. I'm sure that, and that's why we're talking about it. But members just feel more.
The disaggregation of revenue will be done by means of an axis under IFRS 15. So it's likely that companies will create their own members for types of products and services, and those members currently would be extensions. On the other hand, I cannot really say that we performed an analysis on disaggregation of revenue from contracts with customers, because we haven't, because that was impossible, because IFRS 15 was not there. So I can't really, you know.
So you can put in all the members you believe and think will be disclosed.
We could do that, yeah. But and the question is, isn't it too judgmental? I mean,
I think, well, from a preparer's point of view, it'd be nice to have them in there, the ones you think are going to be in there, because then people will track to it and use many of them because they are the right ones, and the ones that aren't, they'll extend for them. You know, if you go in and you're tagging stuff, it's logical. Oh, there's the ones there's the structure I should use. There's a bunch that, oh, I have some of them, and no, I have more, but of course I'll extend for them. I mean, it's brainless for the preparer. They'll probably all do it consistently. But I hope, right. And then, of course, when you see which ones they extend for, later you'd create the common practice tags for those.
Yeah, we will have to perform the common practice analysis on that disaggregation anyway at some point. So, you know, sooner or later, probably they're going to be there.
Louis? I'm sorry, Jim.
Let me just put my card up, so
I'm
jumping the line. Well, it just strikes me as a smart thing to do. Kind of, you know, you're showing that you're thinking ahead. So why not do it? I mean, as long as you've also got the concept of being able to deprecate those items at some point in the future, if they were just getting no use whatsoever.
So I absolutely support doing this as soon as you can get it through, because then I can say to Walter, they did it. everybody's familiar. I think everybody's familiar with some of the issues here. We are proposing to the SEC that we do this more widely. As some of you know, we've been doing these interviews directed at getting a handle on what simplification might look like. And one of the key issues that comes up when we look at something like this is the slide with all your different revenues from sale of copper, gold, and so forth, is that we've effectively provided multiple ways of tagging the same thing. And that is just causing confusion from preparers all the way through users. It is one of the most consistent comments I'm getting back from everybody I talk to. I would encourage you to get rid of this as quickly as you can. We've got to do the same thing. But it won't be without some pain because there are some folks that don't like that. And there's some reasonable reasons why they don't like it. They don't like the fact that you could, maybe not in this example, but you could run into a situation where you don't have an entity-wide value, and they don't like that. So so if, let's say for argument's sake, you only have copper as your revenue, if you're going to use if you're going to use revenue from sale of goods as your line item, then you're going to dimensionally qualify it using the revenue from sale of copper member. You don't have an entity-wide value unless you populate both fields. Some people don't like that. And they've got reasonable reasons why they don't like it. I think it's a software problem. But that's some of the things we have to contend with. The other piece of it, which again I will say is a software problem, is that when we, again, you're saying this means using dimensions for the revenue on the income statement, it also implies that we can start using these dimensions for property, plant, equipment, inventory, intangibles, and so on and so forth across the statements. That then runs into this issue of, I hate this phrase, nonsensical Cartesian products, which again is a software problem. But I think we need to push this. So I wholeheartedly support this, but be prepared to make the case.
I mean, at the moment, I think we would have to leave the member, the line items anyway.
Oh God.
Until.
So you're going to create, you're going to have both?
Well, if we do, yes, because until 2017, the standard is not yet effective. So I can't do anything until 2017.
Allowed for early adoption.
Well, yeah, so I can add the new members, but I cannot delete the old ones, the old line items.
But isn't that primarily a modeling change more than it is a...
Well, we have identified those as those that have been identified so far. We have identified them as line items in the statement of profit or loss.
Well, to the extent you have to provide for both, but I would argue not to do as much as you can to prevent providing both mechanisms. You'll have some limitations, and in those cases you need to explain when to use which ones. That's where we are now. We either have to get rid of it or we got to explain it.
And the question from myself, are you going to create any members for the UGT?
I beg your pardon?
Are you going to create any members for the UGT, for example, for the products for products and services axis, say? Or you're just going to leave it with default?
We are proposing to move in the direction that we're talking about here. We're still working it. But that's our intent.
Okay.
Yes.
Regarding this question, my understanding is that IFRS 15 may have an impact on the common practice of revenue disaggregation. If my understanding is correct, I think we should wait till common practice after IFRS 15 observable.
Mm.
Otherwise, we may mislead filers.
Mm. Okay.
Should I go? Go ahead.
If the filers are going to exchange by themselves, then I think there'll be a nightmare for comparison. So we need to do it as soon as possible. I remember a situation in the Indian taxonomy bill for cost accounting, where we used a list from the from the GST, the list of service and products, and that became the members. So that is ready-made available. It was very large, but it was made available so that people could use it. Here, of course, the question is the IFRS 15 is yet to come in. But the short point is, if the company is exempt by themselves, they can put whatever they want, and you won't, just won't be able to compare neither products nor even industries, for that matter.
Hmm. You got another question? I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. I think I hear two problems here, an IFRS reporting problem and a technical problem. If I understand you right, you say that the disaggregation of revenue would not per se be this these line items. Am I understanding you right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
IFRS 15 provides more details.
Yeah. Yeah. So not necessarily like it is set out here in this table.
I'm not 100% sure. But there may be change.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is in the question in terms of more how rule 15 is interpreted, and whether you would then definitely have this. This exact
well, that's what worries me, the word interpreted, because as soon as you say interpreted, that means we shouldn't be going there. Because the one thing that the board said, we should never interpret IFRS's. Yeah. So if you consider adding anything as members as an interpretation of the standard,
yeah,
a kind of anticipated common practice to be already kind of preparing yourself, but at the same time driving or leading the disclosure, then it's probably not the way we will be allowed by the board to go.
Okay, so you have the answer.
Yeah.
We can review it with the board. It's one of the good questions. Sorry. This would be one of the good topics where we can bring to the board for their incorporating your guidance, but also for their guidance on how to handle this topic, I think.
I mean, the good thing about that question is that we can always add the members later on. For example, if the board that advises us to do that, so it doesn't have to be done necessarily initially. We can either wait for common practice, or we can wait for the board to have their say and then simply add them. It wouldn't be a change of the taxonomy. The axis would be there. It's only a question of creating members. So it's similar question to, should we create members for currencies, should we create members for countries, things like that, which we don't have at the moment. But anyway, I think we should move. Luis, you wanted to move?
Unless it's quick.
Okay. The answer might not be. Are you looking at it in terms of disaggregating off of one revenue line item, or are you considering revenue, then revenue from customers? And
well, IFRS 15 is revenue from contracts with customers, so we would be thinking that entities should disaggregate revenue from contracts with customers. And in that way, we should be looking only at common practice that disaggregates revenue from contracts with customers. That's also part of the reason why the current common practice doesn't give us any assurance that actually that will be the practice for IFRS 15. We can assume, we can guess. Probably we're going to guess right in many cases, but there is no assurance. We just don't know. Yeah. It might be that some disaggregation of revenue that we already have as a line item will not be a disaggregation of revenue from contracts with customers, because most of those types of revenue will not qualify as revenue from contracts with customers. And if we do that, that member, we may be go too far and kind of indicate that it might be a revenue from contracts with customers, when actually this type of revenue is unlikely to be a revenue from contracts with customers. That's where the kind of accounting judgment, that's what Dave was referring to, I think. That's what, we might need to exercise some accounting judgment. And that's why I think it was a very good comment that, maybe we should take that to the board and discuss that at some point, even if not now. I wouldn't like to delay, releasing the taxonomy because I don't have those members. But if we think they are useful, probably it would be better if we get approval from technical staff or the board to go there. That's my take from the discussion.
I know that you've got your card up, but can we, is it quick and or can we move on? He's got quite a bit to go. Okay, yes, you go ahead.
Okay, then the next subject is the use of abstract elements. Vladek, if you could go to the next slide. It's just an observation that we have made, and I have made that observation based on the two or three recent standards. It might not be the case in the future, but it seems that the IFRSs use headings quite extensively, or more extensively than they used to. And in general, when tagging, we're mapping the taxonomy, we ignore those headings, or we have ignored those headings in the past. And if you could go to the next slide. So if we had two paragraphs that were coming one after the other, even though they might have had different headings, we would just put the items, you know, one below each, below the other, without any additional indication that they are coming actually from different headings. What we could do instead, we could create an abstract heading, and then, for example, in this case of the lower two items, move them under a new heading. That would be an abstract element, not reportable element. That would be an element that would just structure the taxonomy. And we thought that, you know, one of the advantages might be that they might improve, they might group similar disclosures together, and then therefore making them easier to find. Because if you are looking for some kind of a disclosure, you might just go to the abstract element and find all the other elements below it as children of it. At the same time, depending how you use the taxonomy, it might also hinder the navigation, in a sense that when you navigate the taxonomy, you would only see an abstract heading, and you would not see the elements that are actually reportable, and it might make them harder to find, especially if we have, you know, levels of abstracts, for example, if we have heading, subheading, and so on. And also, if you do word searches, those abstract elements, they will contain the word structures that are related to a general disclosure. So when you search for revenue, you might not only get the, you know, 10 elements for revenue that are actually reportable monetary elements, but you might also get three headings, which, if you know what they are, you're probably going to disregard them. But if you're not that familiar with the taxonomy, you might think that these are some of the reportable elements. So the question is, you know, do you think that those abstract elements are really useful, and the benefits outweigh the costs, or you think otherwise, or it should be just judged on a, you know, case by case basis? Go ahead.
Is the question here whether we have more sort of abstract headings leading to line items underneath? I see no issue with that. I mean, I think we have to assume that all users of the taxonomy can navigate their way around it. Obviously, there will be some novices sort of first entering it, but I think we've got to assume that all the users and the consumers sort of understand the taxonomy if they're going to be.
What we have done until now, the taxonomy kind of follows the standard, so we go in the same order as the paragraphs of the standard go. So we have thought in the past that it should be enough if you just scroll down and you go by paragraphs. If you read the taxonomy with the standard, you will see that they are in the same order.
Mm-hmm. Any others?
My short comment, just, I mean, as a preparer, we didn't see any great use in this. Tagging the direct element is much more important. Having greater common practice is more important.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The next question.
Sorry, is there something, Rita?
Yeah, Bartek, we have to be, maybe if we can focus on the key topics, we've got to we have like.
Okay. I mean,
5 minutes left.
I think if we don't manage to go through some of those questions, we will just take them to the next call, and I don't think we have. So I'll just finish RevRec the last question with Refrek, because that's the new standard that will be coming up. The next two topics are the general topics, the next three actually. Two of them are specific, we can take them to the next call, I think. And maybe the last one as an introduction to extension that Andy will be doing, that might be, you know, more interesting than the other. Anyway, so just to finalize the last topic on the RevRec. So we have also had a case with RevRec that the standard in one of the paragraphs requires a breakdown of assets by a category and gives examples of those categories. So in this case, these are the cost to obtain or fulfill contract with customers, and the standard says that they are broken down, for example, into cost to obtain, pre-contract cost, and setup cost. The usual thing that we do, and the IFRS taxonomy follows, I think, in all cases, I mean, you know, 99% of cases, is that if something is named in the standard, we would just follow the wording of the standard. So in this case, we would create elements, members for those types of or categories of those costs to obtain or fulfill. So we would have three separate members, as you can see on the slide: cost to obtain, pre-contract costs, and setup costs. However, there were two things about it. One thing is that we are sure that that disaggregation is not full disaggregation. So there will be other members created by companies, because there will be other types of costs to obtain or fulfill. These three are just simply examples. And it's not like that those examples will be used in 90% of cases. Companies are likely to have all kinds of costs. The second thing is that we were told that it's not 100% sure that these members, these examples, do not overlap. They shouldn't, but it might happen that under some strange circumstances, the setup costs are also costs to fulfill. So the member two will overlap with member one. We were told that it shouldn't be the case, and I think it was confirmed also by the person in the US that it should not be the case, but they couldn't say that, you know, 100% that cannot be the case. So therefore, the question is, the first very general question is, do you think we should at all consider going away from the actual text of the standard and trying to come up with some other examples that we think might be useful, instead of just following those examples that are named in the standard? And the second question is, in case, well, okay, maybe I'll stop there, because the next two questions are what if yes? So if you say no, then there are no questions.
Any immediate thoughts? Is that a yes, Luke?
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there.
I'm not sure what we've done
here. I
need to go back and look.
You've definitely initially created the same three members that we did, but you were considering getting rid of them.
Well, I'm thinking about our DPM exercise and thinking about all of our dimensions, which are fundamentally wrong. And I'm looking at this. I mean, Andy, you look at this, and what is your take on that from a DPM perspective?
Not so much from a DPM perspective, more from I don't know. I haven't looked at it in detail, actually, this one, to be honest. So I think I'm going to reserve my opinion and possibly say maybe we should try remodeling it and have a look. But
I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking there's a whole bunch of attributes buried in each one of these, and we haven't really identified the right things. It's not clear to me. But then that's why you're getting, maybe why you're seeing the overlap, too. We haven't really identified the right attributes here.
To be honest, I mean, my initial thinking is we should just follow the standard. If the board had decided that these are the examples, let's create the examples. There is no summation in the taxonomy for members, so we are, you know, not necessarily implying that those members have to total. So we are not necessarily excluding overlaps, and therefore, you know, why should I interpret and create anything else that is given to me in a standard? But this is the safe solution, not necessarily the solution that is the best. I also think that if we know that preparers are going to extend anyway, then unless we are able to do a common practice analysis and provide them with a more comprehensive list of elements, these elements are only three examples out of possible 20 or so. I don't know how many, maybe more. So they are good as examples. They have their source in the standard. But that's my private take on it.
All right, so Luke, Troy, I was going to say you're going to have to I don't disagree with that. You are going to have to revisit at some point with common practice and add and change a lot. Hopefully not change, but add a lot to it. So I kind of like the safe approach. Just put the three on there knowing that you got to revisit it because you can't hit it perfectly today.
Okay.
Marsha?
No, Marshall is just. You okay with that? Can we take the rest to a call?
Yeah, I think we can take the next at least two subjects to the call,
mm-hmm.
And it also will give you some more time to have a look at it. I know, Andy, if we should just introduce the.
We've got Olivier's got one point he wants to make.
It's a very quick question, considering that. The standard is the same in both USGAAP and IFRS, am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
How different or similar are the set of tags in both taxonomies?
Well,
say again?
I think I haven't seen the final USGAAP taxonomy. They are in a good position that they can wait because there is no early adoption, so they are not so time constrained as we are. The version I have seen.
You will inspire Louis. Louis will adopt yours.
Yeah. Well, the version I have seen was
inspiring each other.
Yeah. The version I have seen, which is probably 2 months old or something, and based on some pre-ballot draft or something like that, was very similar, I must say. I think there is some legacy of some elements that were already available in the USGAAP taxonomy that were not available in the IFRS taxonomy.
And in terms of number of elements.
It's 120 elements for us. I'm not sure how many for Louis. In terms of the mapping for the IFRS 15, but I would assume it was similar. The version I have seen was similar. The axes used were the same, except for one case when we were advised by our team to create an additional axis, and I don't know if Louis's team will do that or not. And the members were pretty much similar. This is now the case of those three members that I have just shown you. That was also discussed in the US TAG, so Taxonomy Advisory Group. And we are both teams have to take a decision on that. But I think in general it was quite.
Yeah, I think, we're committed to getting as close to the same as we can. And that means paying attention to it, and if we have differences, then talking about the differences and working those out if we can. We have a converged standard, so we should have converged modeling, right? The one place where we're likely, and we talked about this yesterday, but the one place that we haven't focused a lot of energy on, but maybe we should take another look, is on the element names themselves. For a long time have we really tried to get the element names to be the same. We have a couple in the taxonomy that are same. Profit loss is one. Maybe there's a couple.
We will have a couple more here because revenue from contracts with customers, as far as I know, will be,
So we'll take the same thing. We'll take another look at that. But we're committed to getting it the same.
If I may, John, just for the sake of clarity, the main reason for me to ask the question and again serving here as an humble advisor is that this topic has been discussed for a while, for many, many years, how to, probably not to harmonize, but to make as much similarities between both taxonomies. So I remember a couple of years ago, maybe more, Louis and I talked about intelligent mapping against both taxonomies. One of the main questions that we received for years, for at least 5-6 years, is, look, 3,000 elements in IFRS taxonomy, 15,000-17,000 elements in the US GAAP taxonomy. Here we have a fantastic case, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's the first case that we might, or that you guys might use to show similarities against both taxonomies. So it's a converged standard. It's you guys have been working quite together to make not the same but something quite similar. So maybe tomorrow, and tomorrow might be in another 2 or 3 years, this intelligent mapping that we were asked for many years might be something real. I just suggest you, John, and you guys, to keep this somewhere in your mind, because that's definitely a market expectation. That is why there is, and especially on the users front, and I'm sure that Rita will agree.
It's a very good point, I think, Olivier. The one thing you have to remember is that, you know, the standard is converged, but it's not 100% the same. So, for example, in the US, there is no reversal of some impairments, which is allowed in the IFRS world. So it might seem a small change, but at the same time, it already changes the element for which the reversal is allowed or not, because the value might be different in US GAAP and in IFRS. Yeah, so they are broadly converged, but there will be also some accounting judgment, almost always. I don't think there is a standard. Maybe fair value measurement is closest to it, because it's least related to accounting rather than measuring fair value. But the accounting standards, they have some legacy, they have some decisions that, you know, rarely a standard is a standalone standard. It usually has some impact on other standards. So at some point, some accounting decisions will have to be taken to prepare such a intelligent or any mapping. And that's always a challenge.
If I may, just a couple of other comments. It might serve as a kind of let's call it an experience or something that you might leverage for the two, probably even more important standards, leases and insurance. I know that they are not part of the convergence, but that might be another opportunity. And second, leases.
Leases and insurance. Insurance is completely, there is no standard in the US, so that's a difference. Leases is an interesting one.
Leases.
I think all of them are interesting. All of the standards that the boards have worked together at some point, even if they didn't reach to the, you know. The
let's focus on rev rec.
And last, it's about. I hear that you were referring to members that you might that you will create specifically on the wording of the. Of the standards. So at the moment, I understand that you will limit the members to the examples provided in the standards. What I want to stress here, and again, this group is a fantastic opportunity for having a kind of feedback loop with the technical team. So providing beforehand some kind of anticipated common practice. So that might be a great opportunity, and again, I truly believe that this group is a perfect forum to discuss about it.
I agree, and I think as soon as we go into ED, so exposure drafts, and we actually expose the taxonomy, we will even have a bigger potential group of contributors to such a thing as anticipated common practice, which actually might become not anticipated but included in the standard, because now it's too late. I mean, we're still at the point where I cannot, you know, influence the standard itself. When we go to EDs via the ED stage, at the ED stage and further during the deliberations of the board, we actually, I think, might use this information we get from you, the information we get from the public, to try to influence the board and make a standard in a way, you know, have the standard written in a way that is closer to what actual reporting practice is likely to be.
Okay, I know you've got your thing up, but I want to move on to the data modeling piece.